Welcome back to the Reading and Writing Podcast. My guest today is New York Times bestselling writer Matthew Quirk, author of the new novel Inside Threat. Quirk's earlier novel, The Night Agent, is now a critically acclaimed and popular Netflix series, and Netflix has already renewed The Night Agent for a second season. Publishers Weekly wrote about Quirk's new novel, Inside Threat. Quirk masterfully ramps up the tension and paranoia as the body count rises, agents turn on each other, and Hill tries to suss out who is the greater threat, the traitors or the man he has sworn to protect. Matthew, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Well, if someone hasn't yet heard about your new novel, Inside Threat, how would you describe the novel?
Generally, it's a throwback to some of my favorite kind of like grown-up action movies from the 1980s a little bit. You can think of like Die Hard or In the Line of Fire. That's kind of the tone, and then a little bit of Agatha Christie thrown in because, you know, the setup is the president comes under threat and they lock him in this real life continuity of government, a doomsday bunker. It's the size of like a small city, really, under a mountain in Maryland near Camp David. And then once they close the doors, he realizes he's locked inside with a threat. And so that's the setup. And so it's, you know, a mix of action and then a little bit of mystery in who's behind it all, because as soon as they get inside, a body turns up and then you're off to the races.
Do you remember the original idea or impetus that led you to writing Inside Threat?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It was some start with characters, some start with premises. This was a premise first book because I forget what it was. I think I had years and years ago, somebody had said I should maybe adapt for screen a book, and nothing came of it. But it was a book where, you know, some people are sort of trapped in one place and nobody knows who's trying to kill the other. And it had spy thriller stuff. And I forget what it was, but years later, I was maybe reading about these doomsday bunkers. And I was like, oh, man, if you lock the president inside one of those and then he figures out he's locked inside with the threat, you'd have something that has kind of the setup of like Die Hard or Air Force One or even like Aliens or Alien, you know? And it was just such a kind of like a clean, high concept for a book. I thought, oh yeah, I should do that. And I filed it away and I have this enormous idea file. And when I was casting around for the next book, I said, oh, well, I'll do that because I think I knew I was about to have a baby. So I wanted a really straightforward book. And then I started writing it and I thought, you lock him in the bunker, everything goes down. How hard can it be? And the book was so challenging to write because I didn't realize how many constraints there would be and the challenge of orienting the reader in this this completely counterintuitive place, because they basically burrow tunnels into this mountain and then build a city inside the tunnels. So it's a fascinating place. And all the buildings are mounted on springs to prevent them from shock. So it's a fascinating place. And it would work. I think it'll work well as a movie. And in a book, it took a lot of work to make sure that when the reader dropped into this unfamiliar place, that it was seamless and they could keep track of everything. And it was also just challenging to have those constraints. Like once you're locked in, you have to have all the elements there and you need to keep track of everyone at all times. So sure. It was tough, but I just ground away at it. And then I was really happy with the way it came out in the end.
Well, you mentioned this doomsday bunker for the president. What kind of research did you do for the novel? Did you talk to the Secret Service? Will they talk to novelists? What kind of research?
I did talk to the Secret Service. I have a friend who also writes novels, Chris Albanese. And he talked to me and gave me a bunch of like the great research stuff, like hair bag, you know, is what you call an old detective, the shift whip, all this cool inside lingo that I just love. Mm-hmm. And then the main convenient aspect of the research was I had had in my file Write a Bunker book. And then my friend who just was a finalist for the Pulitzer, a friend of mine from college journalism, and then we worked together in DC journalism, and he's a terrific writer named Garrett Graff. He wrote a book a few years ago about Raven Rock, and it's got everything you would ever want to know, not only about the Raven Rock facility, which is fascinating, but about the government's doomsday plans, which includes this notion that comes up in the book that the government has kind of like secret legal documents prepared to suspend constitutional government in the case of emergency, which is just fascinating thriller fodder. So with Garrett's book, a lot of the research was already there. So I asked him a few questions. I read the book. I did a ton of kind of homework. There's very little public information available about mm-hmm. Raven Rock as far as like the actual visual layout. There's a little bit, but there's actually photos from inside NORAD or the Cheyenne Mountain Complex.
Mm-hmm.
And so that actually let me get some visuals inside the place and really helped picture it and lay it out.
Interesting. Given that you have had best-selling novels, do you find it to be any kind of pressure when you're sitting down to work on a new book, or when you're in the middle of writing a new book, like, oh, you know, is my editor going to like this? Is my agent? How do you deal with that if it does come up?
Well, that's the whole game in writing novels, you know, and it's such a funny job because I was shocked the first, because my first book was very successful. I was very fortunate. And then with the second book, they're like, great, just do that again and we'll see you in a year. And I said, what? You know, it's not like, I don't know, if you're writing a dissertation or something where you're giving chapters and you're, you know, doing outlines and there's a lot of hand holding. Maybe that's how you write a dissertation. I've never done it. But I was just surprised that they say, you know, go off, write another book, and we'll see you in a year. And then when you hand it in, books are so subjective. Sometimes you'll have a book that you think is the greatest thing on earth, and then you hand it in and people are like, you know, it just didn't work. And it's hard to convey how awful that feeling is. And then you basically have to crash on the book and kind of rewrite it. Like, I've rewritten books from scratch in 3 months because that's your livelihood for that year.
Sure.
So, yeah, it's a roller coaster of a job. It's something I would do even if no one paid me. And that's how I got into it. I would just do it on nights and weekends. And it's something I do for the joy of it, writing these things. But it gets there's a lot of stresses built in when you're doing it for your living. You know, it's all a head game.
In terms of, as you said, crashing on the book or rewriting it, I mean, have you ever just thrown one out completely and just said, oh, I'm just going to do something completely different and try to write it in 3 months?
Well, I've dramatically reworked 2 of the 8 or 9. And as awful as it is when you hand in something and they say this doesn't work, it's better than publishing something that doesn't work.
Sure.
And in both cases, I was able to keep a lot of the elements. The analogy would be like putting a new engine in a car, you know? So you might keep the basic setup of who the characters are, but instead of them trying to stop somebody from like rigging an election, you have them try to stop someone from I can't remember what it was, like kidnapping the vice president's daughter or something. Mm-hmm. So it's possible to keep a lot of the character interactions and then completely change the external plot, they call it. So I've done that twice. The book Hour of the Assassin, I rewrote in 3 months straight, and that was almost completely brand new. And it was one of the craziest experiences of my life because I was, it was every waking moment I was working on it.
Wow.
So what was your original writing journey that led you to writing and getting your debut novel published?
Well, I was in journalism and loved writing on the side. And I had done the first kind of formal creative writing I had done was in college. And they really lead you toward literary fiction, kind of short story stuff, like in the New Yorker. And it just wasn't for me. And I loved writing, and then that wasn't the right fit. And so I sort of put that to side. I was fortunate to get a journalism job, and I was at The Atlantic, and it was a great setup. I was really lucky in that I was working kind of directly for the owner, and the owner was a real Washington kind of leading figure. And he would have people over to his house, and his house was the former Cuban embassy, and I'd be at like a dinner there, wondering how the heck I got there with a former CIA director and a correspondent for the Times and all these interesting people. And because it was during the run-up to the Iraq war, like there would be all of this skullduggery and actual espionage in DC. So you'd go over to drinks at your friend's house who wrote about foreign policy, and there would be people from a foreign government who wanted the US to kind of put them in power in Iraq. And all of these things, and just the awe that comes from living in DC as a young person for the first time and seeing the embassies and the White House, all of that kind of overflowed my imagination. And I started using that as a material for this writing habit I had. And but that book took like 8 years, nights and weekends. And I had just given it to a friend to give to a friend who was a literary agent. And later that year, I got laid off. It was the 2008 financial crisis. And 2 or 3 days after I got my notice, that friend wrote back. He had given the book to his boss, who was a very well-known literary agent. And they said, keep going. And so that sort of gave me the confidence to do it. And then I had to write a whole other book. And I had given myself a deadline of my wedding, basically, to see if the writing thing worked. It was kind of 2 years of just writing in the wilderness and living off of savings. And a month before the wedding, that second book, which took 9 months, the first one took like 7 or 8 years, sold, and then the film rights sold. So it was really a wonderful story in the end, even though it was a white knuckle ride when I was in the middle of it.
So did they think that your first novel, the one that took 7 or 8 years, wasn't the right one? Or is that why you ended up writing the second one?
Yes. So it was a little dated. It was, you know, I sort of got it. I did everything wrong you could possibly do in a book, I think. And I tried every cockamamie writing thing. So I think I wrote the most challenging scenes first. So I like wrote it out of order, and that didn't work. And you know, it was something, it was a book that I'd just constantly been reworking for 8 years because it started as a completely kind of thing, different kind of thing. And then I figured out that through people's responses that the thriller elements were actually the strongest parts, you know, because when I first started, I could have been writing like Thank You for Smoking style books. That's almost more my personality, to just be kind of like a humorous, observational guy. Right. And so I figured out what I was writing by rewriting that book endlessly. So it was like, I don't know, your first, if you go to the wine and painting place, you know, that first painting, you don't want that hanging over the mantle forever. But there were elements that people knew I had the chops. So it was a great entree to get a literary agent.
Well, as I mentioned in the introduction earlier, your novel, The Night Agent, is now a very popular Netflix series, and it has been renewed for a second season. What involvement did you have with the series?
They were great. And a lot of authors don't have great experiences in Hollywood. So I was ready for anything, and it was just a fantastic experience. So the showrunner, Sean Ryan, who I was a big fan of going into all of this, he was incredibly gracious, and he reached out to me with the script and said, you know, I wanted to make sure you like this. And, you know, I forget what it was exactly, but make sure he had kind of like done right by the material almost. And I thought, wow, it's incredibly nice of this legendary showrunner to be reaching out to me. And I read it and I really liked it. And there is a certain, when you're an author, whenever somebody tries to change anything, you're like, your initial instinct is like, no, it should have been like that. Cause you've just, you've lived with the thing for so long, you know, it almost seems like accepted reality. It'd be like, if somebody said, well, what if instead of going to college in Boston, you went to college in North Carolina, you'd be like, but that's not where I went to college, you know? But I kind of put that aside because the show was so strong. And the cool thing was that Sean brought half of the story in himself, the Secret Service arc and the Vice President's Daughter arc. And I love that. I kind of put aside that knee-jerk writer reaction to say like, oh, don't change anything, and realized it was going to be its own thing. And it was a really cool experience for me because there's a thrill that comes from seeing your work taken almost in some cases like word for word, these scenes that were really meaningful to me, like, you know, the opening call scenes in The Night Agent or the subway crash, and take in, and you realize like they're just going to film them and take them straight. And then it's such a thrill to see your words and the things you dream up in like your office to be dramatized and to have these amazing actors and all these talented people put them together. And at the same time, at the end of the pilot, the first episode that I was reading, there's the first element that was brand new from Sean. And I said, holy, like, who is this? What's this? And I got to experience it as a reader or a new viewer as well with the twist. So it was just really cool. And then I went up to set and everybody was really nice to me, and I got to see how hard they work, which is, it's just absolutely astounding how hard and how many people work on these television shows, and it's such incredibly painstaking work. And then you know, I got to go up to the premiere, and that was a thrill. It was my wife and I's first night out since we had a baby. It was just it was really fun, and everybody was really sweet there. And I mean, basically what I said, I had some conversations with Sean where he was asking a little bit about the characters. And I later saw when he was interviewed that like those were helpful to him. And I saw it show up in the show. So that was really cool. But my main attitude was, I'm here to help. And I'm also happy to leave it to you. And it was so nice to have such a talented showrunner who I was a fan of because I trusted him. You know, and it might have been a different situation if it was somebody whose initial idea I was like, well, you know, I'm not sure. Or if it was somebody who wasn't just like such an accomplished, talented person. And it was nice to be able to trust him and let it go and then see him absolutely deliver beyond anyone's expectations. And it turned into this like massive global thing. I think it's like Netflix top five of all time. It turned into
that's,
a monster.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
So the whole thing has been a fairy tale. And I'm like, you know, my joke is it's your typical Hollywood story. You know, everything comes together quickly. It works out 100 times better than you thought. And everybody's really nice.
Yeah. I'm not sure that's the typical.
No, I don't think so.
Well, what writing advice would you offer for those who are working on their own stories or novels?
Some of my favorite writing advice is to get away from the computer. And by that, I mean, it, you know, at different stages, it takes different forms. But when I'm figuring out the outline of a story, I will just wander the neighborhood or go for a walk and just let it fill in. Because your brain works at these mysterious, deep levels that I don't think you can accomplish the same outcomes by kind of moving words around on a page. And I'll just think about the story and think about the story, and then I'll come back and write it down and outline it. And then at the same time, or later in the process, I should say, I will, when I have a scene, I will just kind of walk through the neighborhood until picturing what happens in that scene, until I can picture it all in my mind. And then I go back to the computer and write it down. And the same way, if I'm stuck on some creative problem, I'll go take a walk. And it's nice to not be in front of the computer all day. And it just, I find that's like very helpful for creativity. So that's one of my favorite bits of advice.
What novels or nonfiction books have you read recently that you enjoyed?
Let me see. I'm reading The Wager right now, the David Graham. It's about this kind of shipwreck and mutiny. I love that. I read Louis Menand, The Free World. It's like a cultural history of the 20th century. It's really fascinating. And it's hard to, I don't know, I find it hard to get good recent history. The Hilary Mantel trio of books, The Wolf Hall. I love those. I read, I think this is older, Daniel Dennett. It's From Bacteria to Bach and Back. It's just about how like consciousness works. And that was totally mind-blowing. And I think I forgot all of it as soon as I read it. So
now it's in your subconscious.
Yeah. So I don't know. I cast about pretty widely. But, and then, I mean, really the recent books I've been reading are like How to Talk So a Child Will Listen and Precious Little Sleep and all these child
good luck with that.
Books. Yeah.
Well, where can people find you online if they want to learn more about you and your novels?
I have a website, matthewquirk.com, and I do updates on Twitter, which is just MQUIRK, and then on Facebook and Instagram at Matthew Quirk Author, one word. So I keep up. I'm not a 10 updates a day, here's what I had for lunch kind of guy, but but I do, you know, keep tabs on things there.
Well, again, we've been speaking to Matthew Quirk, author of the new novel Inside Threat. The novel is available now, so go buy a copy. And Matthew, thanks for doing this interview.
Thanks for having me. It was
absolutely.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.